Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day Sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
And here we are with another Blunt Business on CannabisRio.com. My next guest advises cannabis clients throughout the Midwest on topics ranging from state-level licensing issues, compliance with seed to sale tracking requirements, tax issues and litigation. And we're happy to go and have him on to go and speak on his expertise and what he's learned from his clients as the rollout of adult-use cannabis is ongoing in the state of Minnesota. So with me right now is a partner of the Cannabis Law Practice Group at Greenspoon Martyr. And joining us right now is David Standup. David, thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Excited to talk about cannabis.
So when I got to go and see the word about Minnesota and just reading up on what's going on in Minnesota, it's fascinating. There's a lot of different wrinkles that are going on with Minnesota and their rollout, and I wanted to get your take on that. So let's first of all talk about what's happening as of right now. So cannabis is now legal for adults 21 and older to use and possess in Minnesota. 23rd state in the country to legalize cannabis for adult use. The medical program was instituted in 2014, a decade ago, and dispensaries can't open until the state figures out a licensing system for the businesses, so they won't open for at least another year, most likely early 2025. So, I mean, I'll tell you, I've heard a lot in the last couple of days. I've been doing interviews with those that were either in New York or in Illinois, and looking at the issues, well, that's for social equity licensing, but just getting the system in place to have dispensaries up and open. I mean, I feel like Texas has a better chance of getting dispensaries open than Minnesota does in the way this is looking. But what can you tell us so far about what's been laid out in the program for adult use, the Cannabis Control Board being put in place, anything peculiar out of the ordinary to be aware of that you've noticed compared to other states and their rollout?
Yeah, well, a few things. First off, Minnesota, as it currently sits, is in a very, very unique position in the country and in the world. Minnesota is the only state in the country where you can walk into a liquor store and legally purchase THC beverages. And that is a result of not the latest legislation, but a legislation that was actually passed a year prior. It was, you know, locally it's kind of referred to as a Republican folly where they didn't realize what was passing. But they actually passed low THC products in both edible and beverage form, and the market as a result has exploded here. You can order them at restaurants, the drinks. You can order them at bars. They're available everywhere. They're available at grocery stores, and they're available at liquor stores. So in the only state in the country where you can walk into a liquor store and side by side you have THC beverages for sale, as well as your normal six pack of beer. So that interplay of the shelf space fight right now is pretty fascinating in Minnesota.
I'm going to go a little bit ahead just to let you give you the heads up on what we're going to bring up here in terms of what is notable, because I like the part where we're going to go just a little bit of a bullet point of what's going on. So number one is the aspect with the liquor stores you just brought up as well. Home grows, I've noticed compared to other states, are much more expansive. Now, we're going to detail this a little bit more, but just want to get a little bit of your thought about, the decision now for home grows to be much more, to be expanded more than most other states have it. Plus, with the indigenous tribes there, which, I didn't realize there were so many, but the opportunities that they can already go and start opening with dispensaries, and they can already start up in reservations that, the Indian tribes can already start going ahead and moving forward with cannabis adult use.
Yeah, so they've done that, both the White Earth and Red Lake Nation, I believe what is the other tribe. They're not very close to the metropolitan area here in the Twin Cities, but they've had a lot of success. They immediately took advantage, starting on August 1st when adult use cannabis became legal in Minnesota. They opened their dispensaries. White Earth has a cannabis grow that is up and running as well. A lot of the regulators are pointing to, and just general industry insiders, and that the success that those tribes are having, despite their location and how far away they are from large metropolitan areas, is indicative of the demand that exists in the state for adult use cannabis. But to your point earlier on, the licensed adult use dispensaries are not going to come online until very, very late in 2024, more likely 2025. And that's, you know, as a result of both the regulatory process that is ongoing and the Office of Cannabis Management that is slowly being established. They do not yet have a head of the OCM. There was a bit of a snafu with the initial appointment of the first head. And they've now most recently issued a report and recommendation to the legislature suggesting some legislative amendments to clear some things up in the bill that they believe will allow for a faster, smoother licensing rollout.
So now we'll get more into the licensing. But the other thing too is that, and this is just a side note for myself, I'm just thinking about the fact that prior to this, you know, Canada's not too far away. And I don't know how far the dispensaries are to go across the border. I know that Winnipeg is about 5.5 hours away from most parts of Minnesota. So the 5-6 hour trip to go up there might have been what some people might have gone for anyway in the first place. But now that Minnesota is getting the full rollout here and what's being allowed, I feel like it is something where there's a lot more autonomy being allowed to the consumers of cannabis more than other states than I've seen in other states. Would you take that to be an accurate account?
I mean, I'm not sure necessarily more autonomy. The home grow limits are significant in Minnesota compared to other states. That's certainly for sure. The municipalities are allowed to, you know, ban public consumption. Most of them immediately opted to do that in August, which isn't different than other states. But the big difference being that you have a state now that is going to have legalized possession and consumption of cannabis for well over a year before there's any dispensaries online that are licensed to sell it to those individuals, which is a pretty unique situation. And that is a result of most states that are in this position allowed their medical dispensaries to convert to dual use dispensaries, essentially, you know, flipping the switch on the date that cannabis became legal and allowing allowing the recreational sale of cannabis in those medical dispensaries.
There's a lot there, and I would imagine with the home grow, and we'll go into more of this a little bit after the break, but one of the things that's also very important to note is, I mean, I don't know how much there is a ratio compared to urban to rural areas, because I know there's a lot of miles of rural area and a lot of smaller towns that are trying to be covered through this. So would that be something that might have been taken into account because of the fact that there's not that many, you know, urban centers or any large cities, you know, aside from Minneapolis, St. Paul, that can handle, you know, the kind of traffic or would have enough. The dispensaries have obviously in all these metropolitan cities, but there's not a lot of metropolitan, say, northern Minnesota.
Yeah, so in northern Minnesota, there's going to be demand. The statute does call for a dispensary floor in each various municipality, one dispensary per 1,200 residents. So, you know, it accounts to some 380 or so dispensaries across the state that will be able to obtain licenses. I anticipate, as in most states, the most successful dispensaries will be the ones that are along borders with states that do not allow for recreational cannabis. And for Minnesota, that's all of them. So, you know, in northern Minnesota, you could see successful dispensaries in the Fargo-Moorhead area. We've got the University of North Dakota that's located right there, and also fairly large population base. Mm-hmm. You can see Duluth having a successful dispensary retail industry as well, because Duluth is a, relatively speaking to the northern part of the state, a population center. You've got St. Cloud that has a university and a larger population base as well. And then you've got Mankato in the southern part of the state as well that has, you know, a large number of people. And then you've got the Iowa border, which recreational cannabis is not legal in Iowa. It's legal in Minnesota.
Right.
It's, you know, same as Wisconsin and Illinois, Wisconsin and Minnesota border, I imagine will be successful, both Dakotas as well.
So let's go to what you talk about when it comes to the dispensaries and the demand that'll be needed to go ahead and take care of the market when it's fully rolled out. So WCCO TV reported that Minnesota will at least need 400 dispensaries to comply with a new state law. So a one risk dispensary for every 12,500 Minnesotans, or at least a minimum of 381 cannabis dispensaries across the state. And participants in a study included Minnesotans who have consumed cannabis within the past year. Of those that participated, 83% reported cannabis consumption at least once a month, 40% reported consuming cannabis daily or almost daily, and participants reported obtaining an average of 24.8 grams of cannabis in the past month, just above the national average. So there you go. I mean, wow, that's, you know, you can see there's a lot more consumption going on here. Demand is high. So to go ahead and take care of the supply, one of the things I'm noticing when it comes to the licensing aspect, you know, I don't know if there's been a lot that's been talked about with social equity or in that area, but is there anything you've heard about that part or what's being done in that part that might be similar to what other states have done so far? I mean, obviously the indigenous tribes, they're going to benefit from this greatly right off the bat, but what about other, you know, disenfranchised groups?
Yeah, so social equity applicant is a defined term in the statute. It was a large piece of the legislation. They're entitled to a 20% score boost on any application process once the application process is announced by the OCM. So the scoring process is you know, kind of a black box right now. It's unknown. There are metrics that are defined in the statute that will be required to be part of the application process. They're very similar to every other state, you know, security plan, grow plans, business plan. And then, you know, social equity piece of it is going to be entitled to 20%. As currently written, then this is unique to Minnesota, a social equity applicant needs to be 100% owned and operated by individuals that meet the social equity definition.
Wow.
That is a significant departure from other states, most of which required the social equity applicant to be a 51% owner or member of the applicant. Maryland was 65%. So they're moving towards, hey, we want to make sure that the individuals that meet the criteria are the ones benefiting from these businesses. The counter to that is if you need to be 100% owned by the social equity qualifiers, if those social equity qualifiers are not independently wealthy and don't have sufficient funds to start these businesses, there's no way for them to get off the ground and there's no way for them to raise money because they don't have equity to sell or distribute because they're not allowed per statute. The OCM has recognized that in the report that they just issued to the legislature. I want to say it was last week. They have called that point out and they've asked for a legislative amendment to it. They point to New Mexico's social equity criteria and indicate that New Mexico only required that 51% threshold. Right. And they make a suggestion that Minnesota make that threshold similar here. It remains to be seen what the legislature will do with that. I do know that that was a big piece of it. The legislative effort was really focused on, you know, Minnesota cannabis for Minnesotans. There is certainly a concerted effort to keep MSOs that are operating in other states out of Minnesota. I don't know how well that plays from a long view. You know, one thing that large scale MSOs have is industry success, capital to deploy, knowledge to deploy. They aren't necessarily the big bad cannabis companies like some people like to paint them as. So it's going to be interesting to see. You know, the OCM has recognized that issue. They've suggested that there would be a change made. I'm in agreement with the OCM in that position. I think that change needs to be made because a cannabis license that cannot be propped up and doesn't have financing and never turns into an actual cannabis dispensary or a cannabis grow is worthless. And so I think there needs sort of mechanism for capital raise. The OCM has recognized that. And I do think that we will see a change coming with regards to that. Now, that doesn't mean that the social equity individuals are going to be left in the cold. They're still going to be entitled to 51% ownership and control of their companies. They'll just have an opportunity to raise money and raise capital and then deploy that capital in a way that they see fit and that it aligns with their business plan and their business visions.
I want to unpack a couple of things on there. When it comes to MSOs, they can live in perfect harmony with craft cannabis owners and for also the social equity licensees. We can have a perfect storm of all of that where, you know, you have large and small. That's totally fine. It's just a matter that we don't want to make it where that the MSOs monopolize the market is what we all don't want to have. But there's always a room for it, absolutely. The other thing is that quota right there. The highlight one more time, 100% of the social equity licensee or the owners that have to be a part of this have to meet the social equity qualifiers. That's, you know, there's not a lot of...
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along, which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. At ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Room to go and work with where, as you said, you're going to have some people that probably do not meet that social equity standard that are going to be part of the ownership or part of the group that's going to be helping to fund and help, you know, to bring this across the finish line so that they have enough money to go past all the inspections and obstacles that go along with trying to get the dispensaries open or get the cultivation, the grows open. I mean, there's, you've got to have that. So like, it really does limit the amount of, you know, you're now limiting it not only because of, you know, various issues of qualifying, whatever those might be, but then those people within that category, they have to also have the business acumen already within them. It's as if and I think that's a part that's not good because I think you can't have it to be 100%. I think when you hear it, like you said, 50, 60%, I think it's feasible, but it's restrictive. And I don't want to say it's racial. I don't want to say it's, you know, oppressive. I don't think it's that, but I think it's just something where you got to have room for, it's just like any other business. I mean, like a lot of times minority owned businesses, sometimes they have to have backing from someone else that's not part of it. I mean, look, there's one thing to be leadership and wanting to pull in somebody else for leadership that comes from the same background as you, the same plight as you. But when it comes to ownership, when it comes to building out a business, and, you know, people can't really afford to go and go through and hopefully find a grant or some kind of public-private partnership that a government, you know, puts aside for social equity, an investment fund. And that might work for only so long. And maybe, you know, you can go and do that and then pay back the loan with 12, 13, 15% interest, whatever it is. But then you also have to withstand whatever kind of inspections, whatever kind of delays there might be on building your property. And I mean, for social equity, we already learned in Illinois and in New York that they all have this idea they had to go and do a temporary facility before their full built out new permanent facility is allowed to be opened.
Yeah. So a couple things there. One, as written right now, property control is a requirement for the application process. The OCM, that's another area that they've identified and suggested that be revised because of the struggle for any applicant, but certainly social equity applicants, to secure property and the financial drain, the results of having to secure property, submit an application, and then wait for your license. Meanwhile, you're paying that monthly rent or lease payment or real estate option payment to make, you know, to keep your option alive every single month. And it's just draining finances from your company as your fingers are crossed, hoping you win that license. So hopefully that part gets changed as well. That being said, I don't think it's a bad idea to give a leg up to applicants that do have real estate control, because those are the applicants that will be open the quickest, because they already have the real estate, which means they have the zoning, they have what's needed to get a license open. The piece of, like you said, in Illinois, the social equity applicants having to, you know, partially open or wait while their licenses get issued. Same in New York. Those two states have something in common that, as much as Minnesota is going to try to avoid it, I don't see how they do. And that's litigation. And the litigation is, the litigation is no one's fault, because it is inevitable. When you have a government program that is going to pick winners and losers on a subjective basis, those losers are not going to agree with the subjective decisions of the government. And their avenue to protest that is through litigation. They might be wrong. The losers might be wrong, right? At the end of the day, the losers could absolutely be wrong, but they at least want a third party decider, the judge, to take a look at what the government did and say, yeah, I agree. I've reviewed the application. This application was better. They're entitled to a license. But I don't see in a competitive licensing state how you avoid that. And so far in this country, there's not been a competitive licensed state that has rolled out their program without litigation. I don't see Minnesota somehow accomplishing being the first. I'd love to be wrong, but I don't see it.
I mean, there's a lot to unpack. There's a lot that you know, they brought the rollout in place. Again, it needs tweaking, it needs adjustment. And some of this is where, when you let government leaders in some cases go ahead and decide to go and make things to where they think they're doing it for the greater good, but they don't really look logically what the real business aspect or what some of the other complications they create as a result. So, you know, they have to go and push, there has to be a pushback. Plus, you know, government runs slowly. So as much as the legislatures respectively run slowly, they're going to make business, and the process, the application process, the licensing process, the build-out process is going to delay. You're just going to get a quick track to getting everything done. It's just not feasible. And every state has already learned it doesn't happen. And yeah, like you said, you can try to as much as you can, not become Illinois or New York, but you're going to do the same thing they did. It's just unavoidable. Now, I'm here again with David Standa, partner in the Cannabis Law Practice Group at Green Spoon Martyr here on Blunt Business. And when we come back, we're going to talk about a real beneficiary of social equity, the indigenous tribes that are now immediately able to go ahead and open dispensaries and start grows right away. We'll talk about what they've already done so far, plus the autonomy for the home grow for those of you in Minnesota to be able to go and grow it. You know, I don't know how you do it in that cold climate. I guess you're going to open up your garages or find a greenhouse and find a way to go ahead and grow it yourself, because you can do quite a bit. We'll talk about that after a short break. Stay tuned with us.
Rolling into some sponsors, but we'll be right back with more Blunt Business.
Welcome back to Blunt Business. I'm here with the partner in the Cannabis Law Practice Group at Green Spoon Martyr, David Standa. From Minnesota Public Radio, I want to ask about this now. So tribal governments, we're talking about the Native American tribes, the indigenous, they don't have to wait for the state's licensing system to open dispensaries. Minnesota's 11 Native American tribal nations are sovereign, and now they can operate independently from state laws and regulations. So the first adult use dispensary opened right away after the legislation was signed on the Red Lake Nation in northern central Minnesota. The Red Lake dispensary is called Native Care. It's been providing medical marijuana to band members and non-members since last April. So this goes in right away. And has there been any kind of, you know, response to the fact that the tribal nations get to go and do this right away? And how much ground will they be able to cover right away for adult use cannabis?
So the reaction, I mean, from someone that represents licensed cannabis companies that have to go through a lengthy licensing process in various states, I've been shocked at how positive the tribal nation dispensaries have been received. They're unbelievably smart and sophisticated, and they were so quick to jump in. You know, Red Lake Nation is having wild success given how far away it is from the Twin Cities. It's about a 4-hour drive. And on its first day, it had to shut down online sales because it had received so many orders it was unable to fulfill them. They now have a mobile, I guess, van, you'd call it. That's a dispensary shop that is operating. Again, they have to maintain their operations on tribal lands unless they get what's called a compact, which is something that Minnesota does, that's something they signed with, for example, the casinos here in Minnesota signed compacts and are able to operate outside of tribal lands. There's been some suggestions that the tribes may get that for cannabis. I would have to imagine that won't occur until after some of the licensed dispensaries are able to get open, because if you allow the tribal lands or the tribes to operate outside of tribal lands before the licensed dispensaries are operating, that they'll create such a large advantage on the industry that I don't think anyone will ever catch up. That being said, there's massive demand here in Minnesota. There is demand for the product. The one question I have is, and I've always had, is like, how much demand will there be if you have to go through the security process that there is a dispensary? And to me, the tribal sales kind of answers that. People are willing to drive 4.5 hours for it. They're going to be willing to go through the hassle of scanning their ID, going into a dispensary, ordering their products, going through a man trap, getting out the door. Like, they're going to be willing to do that. Now, are the soccer moms and the kind of curious people going to be willing to do that as much as they are willing to grab the THC beverages at the liquor store? We'll see. But there's no question that there is significant demand here in Minnesota. And I'll say for the Red Light Nation one, I'd say Minnesota and probably North Dakota as well. I imagine there's people driving over from North Dakota, given the proximity there as well. But they're having success. And it's, it's, for the most part, it's been widely celebrated. And I think what they're doing is very smart and intuitive, and they should be applauded for it.
And the thing about the fact that, I already know that, let's say here in South Florida, where I'm at, I see how well, the indigenous tribes do in terms of having casinos and having all the different facilities that are around it. So like for the longest time, if you want to go and buy cigarettes or buy tobacco itself, you can go through and find various areas to go and do such. But I would imagine the same thing goes here, that in my thought process, I can imagine that, in the same places that have been used for selling tobacco products, I can see where cannabis is being brought in. Like, is there anything to be said about that the dispensaries that they're opening up, do they have to adhere to any kind of, codes or any kind of what they're allowed to go and sell? And, can they do a thing where they can have tobacco and cannabis sold in the same shop or liquor the same way? And maybe in those casinos, there are some cannabis consumption lounges that can be built out and created as well. Like, I can imagine for the Native Americans, there's a lot they could do within the reservations if they attach them to the casinos or be adjacent to casinos.
There is. I think this is where the business leaders of those tribes would have to make business decisions. I don't know what the science or the statistics say about someone that consumes cannabis and their willingness to stay in a casino. I think those casinos are so financially viable that they might not want to mess with that business model if they don't have to. They might be willing to, or more looking more to add a revenue stream separate and apart from the casinos.
Yeah.
But again, I don't know. I don't know. I haven't looked into that, but I imagine they are. And they're considering it, and they're going to do what they think is the best financial play. I'll say that it's not going to be the best financial play, but probably what's going to be the best ethical play. We've had discussions with tribes in other states, and some tribes they're not interested in that. They have had past substance abuse issues within their tribes. And, even if it wasn't necessarily cannabis substance abuse, they don't want to get involved with any sort of substance, despite the numerous studies and the medicinal benefits of cannabis. They're not interested, or they're not ready at this time to make those steps. And those are for the tribal leaders to decide what they want to do. Here in Minnesota, two or three of the tribes were very bullish on cannabis, and they've seen their success as a result.
Well, because I'd imagine, maybe not so much. I can see where the consumption lodges might be the most involvement that a casino might have with cannabis. But I mean, having facilities, having buildings adjacent to it, just because you're going to get all that traffic going into the casinos. Getting them on the way in or on the way back would be beneficial for them to be able to do that. But they have to figure that out for themselves. But they get the chance to do that right off the bat. So that's a wonderful thing for the tribes. You know, again, another maybe sometimes an overlooked part of social equity when we talk about those that are disenfranchised or maybe oppressed or not given the opportunities. That's a particular part of the community that doesn't get considered too much as a minority. I always notice that sometimes more than others. There's always certain other groups of people or other cultures that might get considered, and there shouldn't be anything such thing as any kind of favoritism for one or the other. Personally, if you're going to do it for all. But now, when it comes to people individually at home, this is huge. I think this is one of the most important things that I thought I saw of all of this right here. Let's lay out the home grow. For those who want to grow it from home, citizens are now allowed to possess, use, and grow it. Possession of 2 ounces or less in public is now no longer a crime. People are allowed to have up to 8 grams of cannabis concentrate edibles with up to 800 milligrams of THC and 2 pounds of cannabis at home. They can grow now up to 8 plants. Only 4 can be mature enough to be flowering at once. Exceeding limit could bring a civil penalty of $500 per plant. But it's, again, just a penalty. It's not a criminal offense. It's just a misdemeanor. So let's talk, first of all, this home grow and citizens now getting to yield more than most other states get to. So, how are they going to police that?
Let's be realistic here. I think there's going to be no interest whatsoever in policing.
Right.
And that's kind of the idea behind this is we have decriminalized the plant. We being Minnesota, have no interest in the well-established, long, drawn-out war on drugs and incarcerating individuals for the possession or use of cannabis. I do think that any efforts to give and or sell cannabis, unbridled cannabis, to minors or those under the age of 21, that will bring swift police interaction. But other than that, so individuals that are growing it within their own home, consuming it in their own home, they're going to be left alone. And to be honest, the state fair this year, which was, in late August, was right after legalization. So about a month after legalization. And there was I'm not going to say significant, but certainly clear aroma of cannabis being consumed at the state fair for the first time that I remember. So, if you're with small children, you might want to walk away from the smell. But there was no police presence that was, identifying or, trying to seek that out. That seems to have been this is going to be the way of life now. I have not been to any concerts out at the new Viking Stadium. Target Field.
Yeah.
Didn't really have a lot of summer concerts before, the winter set in, but those are going to come in the spring. And I will bet you right now that there's going to be a significant aroma of cannabis smell as you approach those stadiums and get ready for those concerts as well. And that's just going to be the way of life. So,
it's true. But you make a good couple of points. Avoiding any kind of distribution or selling to minors. And also, try to go ahead and control the amount of plants that somebody might be growing from home. I'm wondering how they're going to take care of that, because I can also imagine that if they're taking away from the profits of dispensaries, neighboring dispensaries, and there's home grows that people are trying to go and go through. This might take care, this obviously takes care of a good chunk of the illicit market, because there won't be a lot of that illicit market if people can grow so much at home in the first place. I think that's one thing that what it will do, it will deter illicit market sales.
I think Minnesota's tax rate on cannabis compared to other states is going to do that better than this. I think if someone was already growing cannabis at home, they're just going to continue to grow cannabis at home. If someone was growing 12 cannabis plants at home and now it's legal to grow 8, I do not believe that they're going to reduce the amount of plants that they have within their house. I don't think that's going to bring any sort of police presence to their neighborhood or to their residence, because unless you significantly abuse this, I don't see law enforcement having the resources or the time or wanting to exert the effort to do anything about it. Now, if you're growing, if you buy out a greenhouse and it's visible on Google Earth, then you can look at it and there's 100 plants. Yeah, you're probably going to get a knock on the door and you're going to have some significant fines. But if you're growing 10 plants in your closet, now, to be clear, this I'm not saying this is legal advice. I'm not saying that you should do this. What I'm saying is I don't see that as being a basis that law enforcement is going to use to, search your house or to enter your house. But that being said, if your neighbor knows you're growing too many and you get in a fight with your neighbor, I wouldn't be surprised if people are petty and call the cops and say this person has too many plants in their house. So, I can see those kind of interactions happening, but it is going to be, whether you agree with it or not, it is going to be an accepted way of life here in Minnesota, that people are going to be able to grow their own plants in their own house and consume the way that they see fit. Obviously, no one should ever get behind the wheel of a car when they consume. Ideally, you should try to consume in a way that doesn't interfere with anyone else's life or bother anyone else. And if that's done, I don't see this being an issue.
Another interesting wrinkle on the home grow. State seed law requires businesses to undergo occasional testing to verify that information about their cannabis seeds stacks up to what they claim on a label. But that process is lax since the state hasn't been able to start testing. And they talked to, there was a story that talked to Michael Merriman, seed regulatory supervisor at the State Plant Protection Division, saying that, quote, "We haven't started accepting things for testing, and in Minnesota, we require things to be labeled with a test that's able to substantiate those labeled claims. That's to protect the consumers of seed in the state." And Merriman also said that about 30 businesses have applied for state permits to label cannabis seeds so far. Minnesotans can legally buy cannabis seeds labeled in other states. And Merriman also says that that has frustrated some retailers who like to offer more Minnesota-grown seeds right away. And he says also, quote, "I think it's going to be difficult for in-state people to work since we're still waiting on rules and the Office of Cannabis Management to get established. People aren't actually able to start growing plants yet and selling plants yet, and that's where they'll get their seed sources from." So the seeds that they're allowed to go and use to start growing with, I guess that's where the regulation will really come into play and where they're getting their seeds from.
Yeah, so this is no different than any other state, right? So let's use Illinois for an example. When Illinois legalized adult use cannabis and they issued you issue licenses to cultivation centers. Those cultivation centers have to get their seeds somewhere, which would be from plants. And in theory, all of those plants should be legal, but it's kind of like you have to look the other way and say, well, we have to start this industry somehow. Like, they have to be able to bring their seeds in. Or if you're growing in one state and you want to bring those genetics to Minnesota to create your craft grow or a home grow, you have to get those seeds into the state somehow. And in theory, they should not be crossing state lines because of the federal illegality. But are you really going to dig into where those seeds came from at this initial point in the industry? Now, a year from now, when we have testing laboratories and we have the ability to track the genetics and we know everything is coming from, yeah, I think it's going to be very important to test and seed and tracking everything. And consumers, especially cannabis consumers who are looking as an alternative to alcohol or other vices, seem to be health conscious individuals that want to know where their products are coming from. And it's going to be important that the labels on those seeds or the products or wherever it is that's being purchased on the consumer end are accurate. And so it's going to take a while. I think they'll get there. But testing is certainly an issue. I know testing right now is an issue in the hemp industry here in Minnesota just because there aren't enough testing sites. And that's just, it is what it is, but you're starting an industry out of whole cloth and there's going to be growing pains and this is going to be one of them.
And one of the other things I always was wondering about, because I know it's with New York State, about how they're allowing outdoor grow or outdoor cultivation. Can you tell me anything about, I wasn't able to find my information. Was there a lot being said about that companies could also grow outdoors or does it need to be more specifically indoor grown?
No, outdoor grow is going to be an option with a cultivation license or a meso business license with a cultivation endorsement or a micro business license, I believe, with a cultivation endorsement. But outdoor grow is going to be an option. You can you get a larger square footage for your grow if you like to grow outdoors as opposed to indoor. Obviously, you're limited in your grow season here in Minnesota if you like to grow outdoors. So, you know, you better make sure that you nail your harvest and get the yield you need to get if you're going to grow outdoors. But I don't remember the exact square footage for the outdoor grow, but it is in the statute. It's specified. The clients I've talked to so far have all indicated a desire to do an indoor grow. But as long as it is, you know, you need to secure your facility, there will be regulations that come out on what does it mean to secure your facility, but outdoor grows will be an option. And I'm sure some people will try them. And I'm sure there's some growers that have a specific cyclical design that they use and they can get a higher yield. And that's what they'll use to grow here in Minnesota.
And I can imagine there's, again, that rotation will come into play. And I can imagine hemp farmers wanting to go and take advantage of be able to go ahead and do that, or they can rotate their crops and put cannabis in, you know, at the same time on their in their fields and then rotate out for hemp. I'm not even sure, but I know hemp really does well in Minnesota. I remember going back and talking to the folks that came from Minnesota that have been doing hemp, and now hemp was originally about going back even over a century ago, was such an important, you know, crop for Minnesota itself. And so, like, to have this opportunity for the farmers out there would also be good for them to know that they can do the outdoor. Except the only difference is, I know, in New York State in particular, they've already had to crack down on some of the outdoor grows because of the contamination from fertilizers, or they're finding, you know, more significant testing of yeast, mold, bacteria, and various other contaminants that might be being put into the plants from being outdoors and being, you know, subjected to the outdoor climate. There's that has to be taken to as well. So I imagine that would be able to be, while that statute is in place and it's an optional thing, that the Office of Cannabis Management needs to go and keep an eye on that for compliance standards, especially for outdoor. So that's another part to be looked at. Now, at the very beginning of the interview, you made the point when we were summarizing some of the advantage that Minnesota has with their rollout of adult use cannabis, the liquor stores. So I want to get into that coming up after one more break. I was going to wrap things up here on Blunt Business. And for those that want to go and learn more about Green Spoon Martyr does in terms of what they're able to go and do for, yeah, maybe for those of you in Minnesota or in other neighboring states that can go and help out. They have 200 attorneys, 26 locations throughout the United States, fully recognized, nationally recognized, full service business law firm with cannabis law practices, especially with where David is situated at. Website is gmlaw.com, gmlaw.com. You can find more about that and take a look at the website as we go to commercial break. We'll be right back.
Rolling into some sponsors, but we'll be right back with more Blunt Business.
We're back with final questions here on Blunt Business with David Standup, partner in the cannabis law practice group at Green Spoon Martyr. So the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel has reported that local governments could start dispensaries in Minnesota, and while state-run dispensaries are a new idea, adult use has opened the door for local governments to run dispensaries similar to how some states own liquor stores. So the framework isn't in place for licensing, but the idea is that municipalities that already run liquor stores could eventually start selling cannabis products. Now, there's a lot of this where I remember in Minnesota, there's a new show we're going to be featuring here on Cannabis Radio called Planting Seeds. And it's being hosted by the Pennsylvania State Senator Cherise Street and Joe Hodes from Wana Brands. And one of the areas you talk about, the fact is something like this here, where Pennsylvania is trying to go look to roll out adult use. Eventually, the bill's already been put into, you know, been drafted, and the legislature is looking to go and bring it up to a vote, hopefully eventually. But the idea is that Pennsylvania already has this one idea where they already do like state-run liquor stores. And they have it where maybe those state-run liquor stores would be able to go ahead and allow cannabis to be sold in those stores as well. So what can you tell me about this aspect here about liquor stores getting the chance to go ahead and sell cannabis and, you know, without having to go through the traditional conventional dispensary model?
So I want to kind of clarify something. So sure, municipalities are able to apply for and obtain cannabis licenses. So they can open cannabis retail stores and they can own and operate them. But those adult use cannabis stores cannot also sell liquor. What the liquor stores can sell is hemp-derived low-potency THC, which is which is from the prior one. And that's what's for sale now in liquor stores here in Minnesota. So even though there aren't any cultivation centers and there's no cannabis or marijuana grows that are generating these hemp beverages, or sorry, these THC beverages, or THC edibles. Those THC edibles and those THC beverages are being derived from hemp right now. They're allowed to, it's Delta 9 hemp in those beverages, and those are allowed to be sold in liquor stores. They can be sold in liquor stores that are owned, as you indicated, owned by municipalities. In addition, the statute allows municipalities to open and regulate their own retail stores. So, for example, there's a town in Minnesota called Eden Prairie. Every liquor store in the town of Eden Prairie is owned and operated by Eden Prairie.
Wow.
And they could, in theory, have that same model for their dispensary. Subject to, they would have to meet the floor, as you talked about previously, 12,500 residents. They'd have to meet that floor for the number of dispensaries. Otherwise, someone could come in and say, well, you haven't issued all the licenses for this municipality. I want to get a license and operate here. You'd have to go through zoning and everything else, and you're probably fighting City Hall on that, but in theory, you could do it. Or the municipalities can say, no, we're going to operate our dispensaries. We think we can do this, just like we think we can do liquor stores, and we're going to design and build out and be compliant, and we're going to do our own dispensaries within our municipality. That is, to me, a very, very part of this bill, and I don't know how it's going to play out, just because, as we've indicated, you know, we talked about previously, if you apply and you need real estate to apply, you could be sitting there bleeding taxpayer money as a municipality while you wait for your license to be issued. And then when your license does get issued, there's all sorts of security compliance, regulatory compliance, everything else that you have to do. Like, how long are your taxpayers going to be okay with that model before they say, wait a second, we want to see some revenue here? Now, given the demand we've talked about, it seems as though these dispensaries are going to be very successful and will generate a lot of revenue. So maybe there's a longer leash for those taxpayers. But, you know, it's going to be very interesting and fascinating. And, you know, some smaller municipalities in various parts of the state might say, yeah, we want to get one. You know, we, based on our population, we have a maximum of one dispensary we need to have. We're gonna get that one as a municipality, and we're gonna run it, and we're gonna generate revenue, and it's gonna be great for us. But you know, just remains to be seen.
You know, it's funny where the government could also go ahead and take advantage of their own thing, and you know, it's like, I'll never understand the whole liquor store aspect where municipalities can run their own liquor stores. And it's always interesting what it's like that up in other states. Well, yeah, just as much as there is, like, you know, last call in other states, because like in Florida, last call is so late here. I don't see a lot of liquor stores that really sell a lot of hemp derived or any cannabis derived products in their stores either. It's always kind of like where they're split up. I mean, because I mean, for us, we also have a real rampant amount of vape and smoke shops all over the state. So, like, to combine both, really, it's kind of like where they just kind of keep it church and state here. It's always been kind of fascinating where other states don't have it as much like that. But, you know, there's so much more we can learn from this. But like I said, this was just a good precursor just to really understand Minnesota and just the unique, interesting aspects of what's being allowed and what can be done. Because, I mean, a lot more questions I can ask about it. But, like, there's so much here. And I commend Minnesota for what they've done to be able to go and become adult use and what they've done with the rollout. Now, obviously, they're going to have their issues trying to go ahead and implement, tweak, adjust so that the program works really well for all. But I think they've done quite a few unique things here to help curb illicit market, to give more people access to cannabis. And, you know, just across the board, I think there's a lot of good that comes out of that. And also for, you know, groups like the indigenous tribes are going to be able to benefit from it as well. There's a lot there. I can appreciate what they've done so far. So, David, let's go ahead and wrap things up. And again, I mentioned the website earlier for Greenspoon Martyr is gmlaw.com, gmlaw.com. And, David, for those that want to go ahead and work with your team and if they might be looking to start in Minnesota, get their licensing up, again, they need 381 dispensaries as a total at a minimum, at least to get them started across the state. I don't know how many licensees are out there, but or how many people are looking to go ahead and get themselves into the cannabis business in Minnesota for adult use. But if they're looking to go ahead and reach out to your team for that or other states or what have you, what should they do?
So the easiest way to do it is to get in touch with me via email. That's david.standa@gmlaw.com. My team and I have been in the cannabis space now for almost 7 years. We've got clients across the country. As you previously indicated, we assist with licensing applications. We also assist with compliance and regulatory issues. We've done several license acquisitions as well, closed several license sales. We assist in litigation, both with state regulators as well as cannabis company to cannabis company, although we hope that all cannabis companies can avoid litigation. We do have the team that can assist with that. And the team consists of myself, Irina Deshevsky, Ryan Holtz, and Doug Sargent. That's the team that was founded and kind of runs the Chicago office. We also have Nick Richards, who is a phenomenal cannabis tax attorney and is kind of the leading expert on 280E, which if you're looking to get in the cannabis space and are not already in it, talking to Nick is probably an absolute must. And then we have a team in New York as well that's headed by John Perrow that is involved in everything that's going on in New York, which is fascinating in and of itself at the moment.
Fantastic. I love what you're bringing out together. And, I hadn't realized that we haven't had Green Spoon Martyr here on this program until now. So I'm glad we got a chance to get to talk to you, David, because it was always the NCIA folks always got to talk to you guys. But, happy to have you on the Blunt Business program. And let's always look at a chance to go ahead and revisit on this and any other areas that come up. So hope we get to go and do that at some point. Thank you again for being on with us. Really appreciate it.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Once again, David Standa, partner in the Cannabis Law Practice Group at Green Spoon Martyr here on Blunt Business. And now you know what it's like in Minnesota. Learn, take from that as you will. A lot of information being disseminated. So if you have to listen to this episode again, please do and take notes. And please make sure to subscribe to the program, Apple Podcasts, Amazon, Spotify, and I'm not going to say Google anymore because they're now, Google itself is already trying to transition out. So you'll find Blunt Business now on YouTube and YouTube Music on their apps, proprietary. So find it there. Thanks for listening in. We'll talk to you next time.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.